Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Jim Blasingame, he's the cyber king of small business. Search Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure, as always. And we're going to have Mick Fleming with us in just a little bit. He's the CEO of the American Chamber of Commerce Executives. But before he gets here, I want to talk to you a little bit more about what I was just talking with you about with Nicole Galinas, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac issue. By the way, in case you didn't know, Fannie Mae is the acronym. It's the nickname for an organization called Federal National Mortgage Association. And Freddie Mac is the nickname. Now, these aren't even acronyms, folks. It's just the nickname that we've given to these companies. Freddie Mac is Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation. And so those are the names. Just for what I know, you're not going to remember. That will not be on the test. Don't worry. They will not be on the test. But I thought you'd want to know that the names Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are nicknames, not a real name. They sound pretty unsophisticated, right, and unprofessional. Anyway, but that's the handy name. Some people even say Fan and Fred. But what I wanted to sort of put together a little summary of what Nicole and I were just talking about. Nicole Galinas and I were just talking about with the Manhattan Institute. When the subprime mortgages hit the market about, say, 8 or 10 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, what they did was they helped to escalate the prices of housing in the United States significantly. Even though Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were not part of the subprime structure, they weren't involved in subprime loans. Those were a different channel altogether for mortgages. Even though they weren't involved in that, the values of housing, when housing goes up in a marketplace, in an area, when the prices of houses goes up, because of one channel, it lifts all channels, which is what it did with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So they made more and more loans, and the exposure that they had through the higher mortgages on these higher valued homes increased significantly. So that's how they got caught up in all of that. That's how their exposure got increased so much, was because of the increase in the value of homes, not necessarily their doing, but they did get involved in that. So they rode the whirlwind up. But then, which established the exposure at over $5 trillion. But then when prices started coming down in a lot of these areas, not all markets are having this problem, but there are a lot of homes in the areas that are, California, Florida, and some other states, as those prices have come down, they've ridden that down. So what's happened, though, is that they establish the exposure at a certain level, but the underlying asset, the home value, has come down. So it's go out and buy, the simplest way I can think about it for you and me is you and I go out and buy a new car, and it's a car that's kind of a it has a high price on it, but it turns out that it doesn't have a very good resale value. So we go out and finance that car for, let's say we buy a $40,000 car, brand spanking new, and we finance it. The bank gives us the loan. But then we lose our job, let's say a year later, and we need to sell the car. But we financed $35,000 on the car, and now the car's only worth $20,000. It lost half of its value in a year, let's just say. Now, this is not, these numbers aren't, these aren't numbers comparable to what you're going to find in real estate. I'm just trying to make a point here. So now you owe $15,000 on your house, on your car, more than it's worth, more than you can sell it for. That makes you, that's what the auto dealers call being upside down. You're now upside down. Well, what's happened is these mortgage organizations are now getting upside down because the exposure that they've got, the guarantees that they made on these loans are now a much greater than the value of the homes. And as the economy weakens and as people default, as they are starting to do, not in great numbers, as this is happening, then these organizations are getting exposed and they're getting into trouble, and just like you would be on that car situation. But the government on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has guaranteed those. They've implied explicitly, actually now, said that they will back this $5 trillion. When it says government, that's you and me. We're back. It's 17 till. That's right. 7:43 after the hour. 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate, little bit of John Mellencamp bringing us back. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you can find the show and the archives and the articles and the Brain Trust and the newsletter and the blog and lots of other stuff to help you with your small business. You find a Think of a topic. Go there with a topic on your mind, with a pain, or an opportunity, or a challenge, or whatever on your mind. Look for the categories. Look at the various sections, the articles and the archives. The Brain Trust members are arranged in categories, so you can find the topic that's on your mind. It'll help you organize the search for the information you're looking for. Smallbusinessadvocate.com, and don't forget our knowledge base, which we also have categories that you might have on your mind. AskJim.biz is our knowledge base where you get small business answers now, so I hope you'll check those out. I'm still talking about this. I've still got this Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac thing stuck in my craw, and I want to talk about that just a little bit more. What I said as we went to the break is now that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are upside down, remember what Nicole said? $5 trillion in exposure. Trillion, folks. That's half. She said it's almost half of the U.S. GDP. I'm sorry, the U.S. debt. The national debt of the United States is $9 trillion. I didn't think it was that much. She says it is. I believe her. $5.3 trillion exposure just from these two organizations, just from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, you know, we need to make sure we use the balance sheet approach to this thing. Because of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, because they exist, you and I, most of us, have had the ability to own a home. Home ownership is a big deal in the United States. To my knowledge, there are no countries in the world where home ownership per capita is as high as it is in the United States. It's one of the great parts, one of the parts that we hold so dear of the American dream. So, to do the balance sheet thing appropriately, we have to point out that, and as Nicole told us, the Fannie Mae Freddie Mac origins go all the way back to the 30s, really, 1938 or so. So this has been a good thing for the economy. But so I don't want to take that away from them. But they've been allowed to get out of hand. And so now, against a $5 trillion exposure, they've got $80 billion in capital. So, folks, anytime if you had a banking organization on Wall Street with that kind of capital to debt ratio, I think they'd be in trouble. You heard her say that somebody called them insolvent. Well, for a long time, and you've heard us talk about it on the show. Joan Pride and I have talked about this on the show when she's been here when we've covered the Kiplinger letters, we've talked about this implicit and explicit guarantee by the federal government issue. The investors have been investing in shares, publicly traded shares, of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac because they felt there was an implicit guarantee by the government that these stocks, that these organizations would not fail. Meaning, with a wink and a nod, the government said, don't worry, we'll take care of this. That's implicit. Explicit, obviously, would be where the government said, oh yeah, don't worry, we're going to take care of this. But, so now we're getting to the point where that's being put to the test. And so, I think we now know that what was once implicit is now pretty much explicit. The government is going to do whatever it has to do to keep these two organizations from failing. But what that means is, though, is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, all that exposure, that $5 trillion exposure, could very well wind up on the government's books. So does that not, as she said, increase our national debt by about almost 50%? Does that not make the national debt now $14 trillion instead of $9 trillion? Yes, it does, basically. And so then what do you do with the shareholders? What happens to them? What happened to the Bear Stearns shareholders? They lost their shirts, right? So what's going to happen to the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac shareholders? Now, Nicole, as she was leaving off the air, I said to her, you know, should we privatize these organizations? And she said she didn't think that was going to be a possibility because the government, that it just wouldn't work out. But she said that it might work out that the government actually took them over and that they actually became fully government organizations. No funny business at all, literally just run by the government, which I'm not so much in favor of that. Here's what's happening here, folks. The continued influence of the government on our financial sector is what's worrying me, what's got me concerned. It started with Sarbanes-Oxley. Then we had the moral hazard of the bailout of Bear Stearns. Now we've got this issue with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'm concerned that the government is, and don't forget the discount window that the Fed opened up to private banks, just to investment banks, not commercial banks. That too, that's another area. These are all concerns that I have about what the government, how much the government is going to get involved in the marketplace. And it's very frightening to me. Tintel, going to be right back. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't go away. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And it's just you and me, and I want to wrap up my thoughts on this whole Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac thing. I discovered a book a few years ago called by a guy named Charles McKay, M-A-C-K-A-Y, Charles McKay. And you've heard me use this term before. You've heard me identify this book before. Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. I love that title. Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. He wrote this book, ladies and gentlemen, in 1848, I think it is. 47, 48, somewhere in that area. I'm missing it a year, maybe one way or the other, but it was certainly in the middle of the 19th century. Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And he basically wrote this book, it's a pretty thick book, on three topics. Three scenarios that you might that you'll find interesting. The first one was tulipomania, which was 400 or 500 years ago, where they were selling tulip bulbs for, you know, even in those days, for $1,000, $2,000, $4,000. I mean, when there's a tulip bulb ever been worth that? Well, they just went nuts, and that's what happened, and it collapsed. Then there was the Mississippi scheme, which was where they were going to find gold in Mississippi, and they were selling land like crazy, and I'm paraphrasing all these, of course, and that collapsed. Then there was the South Sea bubble, which is something similar to the Mississippi scheme, only in the South Seas, and that was built up, a lot of speculation, a lot of people invested in that, and that collapsed. Then fast forward to my memory, and we had the junk bond era of the early 1980s. You had, there were many before this, folks, so the stock market of the 1920s, of course. But you had the junk bond thing, which collapsed in the early 1980s. Then you had the run up in commercial real estate by being able to create a bunch of private placement limited partnerships. You had all that in the 70s and 80s. That collapsed with the Tax Reform Act of 86, which basically did away with all of the tax advantages of those partnerships. And when the Tax Reform Act of 86 happened, it collapsed the syndication industry that was creating all those investments. But all those investments had been taken out, had been financed by savings and loans. And that created the S&L crisis of the late 1980s. With the Resolution Trust, you remember that, and the government had to come in and basically bail out all those organizations. Now, the net result of that was they did a pretty good job. The Resolution Trust did a pretty good job, and I think the government actually wound up getting all their money back because they had assets. They were underlying assets. That's an important point to remember. Then you had looked in the 90s, and you had other things, but one of the things was the dot-com hysteria, right? That's when I first started talking about extraordinary popular delusions and the madness of crowds on this show, 1997, 98, 99, 2000. You know, you knew that there were people going public with companies that were internet companies at the moment they went public. They didn't even have a website up yet. It was just an idea. They were going public with business plans. That's right. And people were giving them money. Their stock was, I mean, it was like nuts. And of course, that collapsed in March of 2000, right? That's when the NASDAQ went from 5,500 to 1,200, almost not overnight, but almost overnight, right? And the Dow did the same thing. We had all these problems. And then we had the Enron. I mean, my point, folks, is human beings have the tendency to do this, and it seems like we never learn, doesn't it? But what I'm concerned about is in the past, human Americans, at least, had been, we'd sort of taken our lumps. We invested in something. If it was a mistake, we sort of said, well, I shouldn't have done that. I lost it. I've lost it all, or I lost part of it, or whatever. And you get over it. But here's the difference. Today, America is not like that. Today, whenever something happens to Americans, we look around and we say, and I hate to sound like Phil Graham, but we're all a bunch of whiners, but we do. We say, who's responsible for this? Somebody should fix this. Somebody should make me whole. And then some government entity says, hey, they're right. The government should get involved and make these people whole. And that's what's happening right now. The government is getting involved in more and more in the marketplace. They're inching their way into more and more control of the marketplace. Folks, as ugly as the marketplace can be, it will never be any uglier than when the government gets involved. And that's the thing that concerns me. And you'll hear me talking about that as long as I live, as long as the government keeps doing what it's doing. Folks, when you make a mistake, you should just pay for it and deal with it. It's your mistake. Nobody else did it. You did it. Got to take, actually, I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I got one more to go after this one. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.